I love to ask people and hear stories about how people found unity. And I know that some of you in this room were carried in one of those baby seats. I realize that. But for most of us who find it as adults, it is so common to hear people say things like, I walked in the door and I felt like I was spiritually home. Or another thing I've heard so many people say is, you know, as soon as I realized what the truths were that unity taught, I felt like they resonated with a belief inside of me that I've always had. Did anybody in this room ever feel that? I think a lot of us have. Look at all the hands. I think a lot of us have. One day, not very long ago, I was sitting out in front of Bread Co. having lunch and reading one of the books that we gave members, reading it actually. And a woman, a complete stranger, came up to me. She said, can I ask you something? And I said, well, yes. She said, what is that book about? You know, an intriguing title, Discover the Power Within. So I told her a little bit about what it was about and that it was written by a Unity minister. And she said, well, I think I've heard of this thing called Unity. Just tell me in just a few words what it's all about. Well, I ask you, if someone, I bet this has happened to you, if someone said to you, what does Unity teach? After you clarified, oh, no, we're unity, not Unitarian, after that was clarified, then what would you say? What are our main teachings? What keeps you coming back to unity? And some of us for years and years. Well, I thought today, since it's the day of the annual meeting, it would be a good time for us to address some of our history and some of our main beliefs. And so that's what we're going to do today. Now, as most of you know, the movement began with Myrtle Moore, who was diagnosed at an early age with tuberculosis. Her family, her father's side. Today, since it's the day of the annual meeting, it will be a good time for us to address some of our history and some of our main beliefs. And so that's what we're going to do today. Now, as you know, our movement began with Myrtle's religious lay movement that was known as New Thought. Now, 5 years later, Myrtle Fillmore unfortunately had her tuberculosis return with a vengeance, and doctors told her she really only had very little time to live. In 1886, Myrtle and Charles attended a series of lectures by E.B. Weeks, where she heard an affirmation that changed her consciousness and changed her life. And many of you in this room know what it is. Say it with me. I am a child of God. I do not inherit illness. And these words touched Myrtle's heart, and she began a daily prayer practice, resulting in her complete healing within 2 years. And in case anybody wants to know how complete the healing was, she lived well into her 90s, despite her prognosis. But at the time, Myrtle was so excited about her healing discovery that she began working with others. Neighbors asked her to pray with sick children about marriage problems and financial issues. The grocer, the meat man, and the mail carrier all came to her, and the results were absolutely incredible. In a letter that Myrtle wrote many years later, she said, "It was such a wonderful time for me when I awakened to the truth that God is my Father and I inherit from God only what is good." Now, interestingly, Dr. Weeks' words that had such a profound effect on Myrtle did not really impress Charles at the time. Later, he admitted, "The doctrine did not at first appeal to me." But eventually, he became so inspired by his own observations of what he called Myrtle's continued demonstrations that he came around and he decided to follow his own spiritual path. And he wrote, "I was much interested and took lessons in all the different schools of New Thought. But for a time, I was mentally disturbed by the many conflicting statements of truth made by various teachers. I noticed, however, that all the teachers and writers talked about the omnipresent, omnipotent God who is spirit and accessible to everyone. And so I said to myself, in all this babble, I will go straight to headquarters." This is Charles. He's a very practical man. "If I am spirit and the God they talk about so much is spirit, we can somehow communicate, or the whole thing is a fraud." And he continues, I commenced sitting in the silence every night and tried to get in touch with God. There was no enthusiasm about it, no soul desire, but just a cold, calculating, business-type method. I was there on time every night, and I tried all sorts of things to realize that my mind was in touch with Supreme Mind. In this cold, intellectual attitude, one can easily understand why I didn't seem to get any results. But I kept at it month after month, mentally affirming words that others told me would open the way. And eventually, Charles started having exceedingly realistic dreams, which he finally realized were guidance from spirit. And sitting in the silence became a daily part of his regimen for the rest of his life. His granddaughter wrote a story about when she would have her friends over to the house, that they would walk by, and he always had his chair in front of the fireplace. And she said, until I was about 10 years old, I thought everybody sat in front of the fireplace every single night. You know, that was his regimen to go into meditation. In addition to that, he began to study New Thought. In addition to New Thought, he was already doing that. He began to study the Transcendentalists. His favorites were Emerson and Thoreau. He studied Eastern religions, philosophy, and the links between religion and science. And both he and Myrtle began to write about their beliefs and discoveries and to hold meetings with their friends in their home on Sunday afternoon. Now, the Fillmores, from all their reading and praying and meditating, really believed that there were certain things that we would call absolute truths, those things which are absolutely according with the God as divine principle and that are eternal, that are not fleeting. And after all their experiences in prayer and meditation, they became convinced that the important thing was inner knowing, that the truth is already within us. And Charles called that our inner light, the light within. He wrote, if you want eternal truth, you must seek it in your own heart. So as we heard in our membership ceremony today, truth is not the formulated doctrine of any church nor the creed of any sect. Truth is written in the inner sanctuary of every soul, and we all can come to know it without external formulas. In fact, students who came to study with the Fillmores early on and people who study Unity today are still called students of truth. So from that point on, focused on this inner knowing and spiritual communion, the Fillmores developed a great deal of time, or devote, I should say, a great deal of time and energy into studying the nature of God. And this reminds me of a story about a kindergarten teacher who was walking around her classroom observing her students who were drawing pictures, coloring pictures. And she came to this one little girl and she bent over, like all good teachers would do, and said, tell me about your picture. Well, the little girl didn't even stop coloring. She was just on a roll. She said, I'm drawing God. And the teacher paused for a minute, not sure how to handle it. And finally she said, well, sweetheart, honey, you know, nobody really knows what God looks like. And she said, oh, well, they will in a minute as soon as I'm finished with my picture. So, honestly, at that time, there were many people in various religions who were really sure that they knew exactly what God was like. They thought they had a very clear picture of the divine. But I'm here to tell you that picture wasn't very pretty. It was based on Old Testament writings where God is often portrayed as a powerful old man in the sky, and yes, always male, looking down on his subjects in judgment and anger. There's the mighty fist of God. This is the image of the divine that some still cling to today, a deity created in the worst of human image. This is a God who plays favorites, keeps an ongoing tally of bad behavior, punishes and holds grudges. A God who is mean-spirited, vengeful, and full of wrath. This is a God to fear. This is the God is going to get you model, as this sign exemplifies. Whoever stole our mower, God will get you. And then an even more specific one, which says, Whoever stole our air always said, in unity, we don't just believe in Jesus, we believe Jesus. And we know that Jesus so many times called God Father, Abba, an Aramaic word that can most closely be translated as Daddy or Papa. Now here's one of the many examples, there are lots in the Gospels, be merciful even as your Father is merciful. And Abba was really a term used by young children to address their parents. It was really used to address both mother and father, signifying a close, intimate relationship based on love and trust. Jesus is saying here that God is like the father, mother we all wish we had, all loving, all providing, all forgiving. And Jesus also reminds us of something that was in the membership ceremony a few minutes ago, that God is spirit, and those who worship God must worship spirit and in truth. And in fact, Charles once said in a speech at Unity Village that Unity's Christianity was built on the right concept of God as spirit. And in Revealing Word, he writes, God as principle is absolute good expressed in all of creation. When men know God and worship God in spirit and truth, they recognize God as this great eternal goodness, omnipresent, omniscient, and omnipotent. And in unity, we do see God as this omnipresent spirit, unchanging principle and loving source of all that is. God is the one power we see every single Sunday, one power, all good, and we're present. God is divine energy, and in God we live and move and have our being. And the Fillmores taught that the universe and God are all one. From Myrtle, the best that we have in spiritual teaching says that God is in all, through all, above all. We know that God is the only real power in the universe, and in God there is no evil. God is good, God is love, God is peace, God is life. God is unfailing and abundant substance. And that substance of God is everywhere present, as inexhaustible as the air we breathe. Now, in unity, we don't only see God differently, we see ourselves differently. The Fillmores, along with H. Emily Cady, the author of Lessons in Truth, the very first book ever published by Unity, all of them state in various ways. Charles says, Christ is the mind of God individualized. They all talk about the indwelling Christ. Charles' favorite Bible verse was Christ in you, your hope of glory. And Myrtle wrote, Christ is the life principle within each one of us. And Emily Cady was equally direct. She said, the divine substance, call it God, call it creative energy, or whatever you will, is ever abiding in us and stands ready to manifest in whatever form any of us wish or need. So unity teaches us oneness. One world, one love, one God, that we are one with God, and any thoughts of separation are what Charles Fillmore called error thinking. The truth is that we are spiritual beings, and we can never be separate from our source. In fact, this is what Charles had in mind when he received the divine inspiration to use the name Unity. Unity meaning oneness. Our name means that there's no separation between God, the world, and us as individual expressions of the Christ. One with God, we're also one with each other despite any earthly differences we might notice, despite skin color, religious differences, sexual orientation, country, class, or culture, we are all one. We look at one another and say, I behold the Christ in you. And this means that our true essence is the presence of God within. We are not, as Greg Nedler says, scum-sucking sinners coming into this world full of shame and guilt. How can we be? How can we be? We are created in the image and likeness of God, born in original goodness. And I know some of you have heard this, but I know there's some new people in the group who have not. And I think this is one of the best examples of why we believe in original goodness that I've ever seen. And it is from, thank you, I went the wrong way. Thank you, Carol. Carol keeps me in shape in all ways, air conditioning, and thank you. Did the wrong way, went backwards. There we go. Okay, I'm there. This is from the book How to Pray Without Talking to God, which is really a book about how to pray without feeling that God is the old man in the sky up there, how to feel our oneness with Spirit as we pray. And this is after 17 hours of labor with her daughter, and she says, my husband wrapped her in a soft blanket and placed her in my arms. She turned her dazzling little face up to mine. In that moment, captivated, I spoke the words that I knew were on everyone's mind in the room. The doctors, the nurses, her father. I held her in my arms and looked into her eyes and cried out, God help you, you miserable little sinner! No, I really didn't say that, she goes on. In her, I saw the purest expression of love in human form. I saw the beauty of absolute perfection. And this whole idea of original sin really didn't show up in any writings until the end of the 4th century. There is absolutely nothing in the Gospels about it. There's nothing the apostles ever said about it. It really was created long after Jesus walked the earth. And so, this whole idea of being born in original goodness is what we believe in unity and what we follow. And that means that we are absolutely one with the love that God is. If God is love, then love is our very nature. And in the creation story, if we look back there, God doesn't look at his creation and say, oh, that's okay. Oh, that's mediocre, does he? What does he say? It is good, it is very good, and we are part of that creation. And so we are one with the goodness of God, and we strive to see God's good everywhere. With every breath, every thought, we are called to remember who we are, the truth of our being. Jim Rosemergie says, we are placed in an immense cosmos, and we are told to explore it. But we are also placed in an intense cosmos within, and we are told to explore it. And that is the cosmos that is even more magnificent. And there is this absolute principle in unity that we are here. Jesus said time and time again, you are here to seek the kingdom. And we seek the kingdom by seeking an awareness of God. For we know that this consciousness is the fountain of life and the answer to any human need. Remember, we can never be separate from the presence, the power, and the goodness of God, except in our own thoughts. So the next time somebody comes up to you, a stranger at Breadco or any other place, and says to you, what is this unity thing all about? Help them understand that in unity, we are encouraged to explore and apply teachings based on our own intuitive understanding. We provide a personal, practical, positive path to spiritual living. Charles Fillmore wrote again and again, if all of this spirituality means anything, it has to inform and enrich our own lives. I think for many years when I went to church, I wore my spirituality like a Sunday cloak. You know, I put it on and it was fine when I was there, and when I walked out the door, I didn't think about it again until the next Sunday. And so that's not what unity is all about. Unity's here to give us that absolute sense of our oneness with God that just enriches our lives every single moment. And if somebody asks you what unity is all about, it's probably a good idea to just review the first two principles. And they are, we talked about them today, God is the source and creator of all. There's no other enduring power. God is good and everywhere present. And the second principle, We are spiritual beings, created in God's image. The Spirit of God lives within each person. Therefore, all people are inherently good. I think this is a message that the world needs to hear. What about you? And so let's just take a moment now, before we go into prayer and meditation, to take into our hearts and souls the truth about the nature of God. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent. And so it is. Together, there's only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.